Astrid Artigan's leg.
He didn't say anything about not killing you.
And he pulled the trigger. Artigan screamed. In the muzzle flash, he saw his own right leg explode in a gaudy bouquet of blood and gristle, leaving a ragged stump of gleaming bone exposed just below the knee. Curling back, he tried to scramble away and went sprawling backward across the floor.
"Hurts, doesn't it?"
Voistock stepped closer.
"You'll never walk again. You'll never fight. You're a cripple now. You'll live in excruciating pain for the rest of your miserable life."
He raised the blaster, pointing it directly at the inmate's head.
"Maybe if you beg for mercy, I'll spare you. Grant you a quick death."
The old man stared up at the blaster, his face momentarily evacuated of all expression. Then, he smiled. It was a warrior's smile, full of pain and brokenness, and beneath it all, a kind of cold-eyed clarity found among soldiers and killers whose entire lives had been spent plying their trade in the marketplace of mortal suffering. Beneath the blood, the old scars stood out clearly across his forehead. When he spoke, his voice was calm and steady.
"On my home planet," Artigan said, "it is no small thing to make up a man's dying bed. It may only take a few seconds, and it may be nothing but the ground where he falls. But it is not a matter to be taken lightly. Are you sure that you are worthy of that honor, C.O. Voistock?"
"Honor," Voistock snorted. "Old man, who do you think you are?" "I am Artigan Truax."
His words had become low and hoarse, but remained unwavering. Beneath his lids, the whites of his eyes were turning red, filling up with scarlet from internal hemorrhaging.
"I have killed men in 11 systems. I have fought well and withstood much and have not given quarter. I will not be broken by the likes of you today, nor will my son. And I will not beg for mercy."
Voistock shook his head, finger tightening on the trigger.
"Then you can
The words broke off. There was a sharp vertical crack as the guard's head swiveled around backward 180 degrees. Artigan Truax looked up and saw the Zabrak standing over the guard's dead body, holding him by the jaw and skull base. The one called Jagannath released his grip, and Voistock sagged to the medbay floor in a boneless, lifeless heap.
"Jagannath,"
Artigan managed. The red-skinned inmate was looking down at him with no pity in his yellow eyes.
"Talk," he said.
Open Secrets. For a long moment, the old man just stared up at him. His face had gone completely white, except for his eyes, which had become bloody orbs. His breathing was hoarse and labored. He was shaking violently. Yet, for the time being, he still appeared to be lucid.
"What did you do for Iram Radik?"
Maul asked.
"Why won't he let you leave?"
The old inmate's lips moved, but the words they formed were too faint to hear. Blasters began firing again outside the sealed hatchway of the medbay. Leaning forward, Maul managed to catch his words.
"Egan, your son is here,"
Maul said, glancing over to where the boy lay sprawled unconscious among a pile of surgical instruments. Then he looked back at the old man, taking in the sight of his maimed leg and the ever-broadening lake of blood that surrounded him.
"But you're not going to be in any position to watch over him any longer. Not like this.
The old inmate's face tightened. Already he seemed to grasp the severity of the situation.
I can protect him.
Maul said,
If you tell me what I need to know.
He leaned in again.
What did you do for Iram Radik?
The old man nodded. When he spoke again, his voice was husky, a forced whisper.
Saved his life.
Radik's. Another nod.
When was this?
20 years ago,
the old man said.
On Lakteen Depot, near the Giju Run.
Where is he?
Maul asked.
Where can I find him? Is he here inside Coghive 7 right now?
Artigan's mouth trembled.
He is.
Outside, the shouts of the guards got louder. Now the blasters outside were very close. Metal fragments were ricocheting off the inner walls, pinging and scraping into the medbay. Maul knew they'd have it open within moments. He turned, rising, and saw the older inmate's gore-streaked face gaping at him just inches away. He reached out and grabbed Maul's wrist. Somehow, beaten almost to death and missing a leg, the old man had still managed to marshal his strength.
Where is he now?
Maul asked. The old man gaped at him, forcing the words out through sheer determination.
Egan,
he said.
Egan knows everything.
Before Maul could ask again, there was a sharp click, followed by a humming noise as power came back on. Overhead fluorescence shuddered through the medbay around them, their intensity revealing the true ruin of the old man's face.
Hold it right there!
A guard's voice shouted. The doors slid open as guards burst into the room, blasters at the ready, flanking it on either side. Maul heard guards' boots thumping toward him as they knocked him to his knees, grabbed his arms, and pinned them behind his back. He started to stand up and felt the unmistakable hot metal ring of a recently discharged blaster barrel pressing against the back of his skull.
Don't move, maggot!
The guard behind him said.
We've got orders to take you directly to the warden.
The hot steel nudged harder against his skin.
But that doesn't mean you might not have a nasty accident along the way.
Maul growled. Only then did he turn and glance back at the old man, who lay in a heap less than a meter away.
Egan knows everything.
Let's go!
The guard said.
Now!
Maul turned his gaze from the old man and rose slowly to his feet to follow the guards out through the hatchway into the open corridor beyond.
Spindle.
They brought Maul up in the crowded service lift, two guards flanking him on either side with another at his back, jamming the barrel of his blaster against his spine. Gazing up into the reflective surface of the lift's interior, he recognized the face of Smite, the young recruit who had first screened him when he'd arrived.
What are you looking at?
Smite asked him. Maul's lower lip drew back enough to reveal his sharpened canines.
Touch me with that toy of yours again,
he said, his voice utterly expressionless.
And you'll find out.
Smite's face constricted, but he didn't poke Maul with the blaster again. When the lift came to a halt, the COs ushered him into the gleaming office, whose sleek and elegant interior couldn't have been more dissimilar from the rest of the prison. Stepping through the doorway, Maul saw the dark-haired woman with cold blue eyes standing just inside behind the desk. Her gaze was steady enough, but the smile on her face looked as if it had been glued into place by a pair of none-too-steady hands. Inmate 11240, she said. I'm Warden Siddiqui Blur. You'll forgive me if I don't shake your hand. Maul said nothing. We've had some unseen developments down in Medbay this afternoon. She nodded at the monitors behind her. Our surveillance of that time period is incomplete, and I'm hoping you'll be able to help me fill in the gaps. Maul didn't respond.
You heard the warden,
one of the guards said, not Smike this time, but a heavyset man with thick black eyebrows.
Tell her what you did to Voistock.
He had an accident,
Maul said.
You're a corking liar,
the guard snapped, reaching for his blaster.
Actually, Siddiqui said, waving him off, not taking her eyes from Maul, I'm not even remotely concerned with what happened to Officer Voistock, or who was ultimately responsible for him getting exactly what was coming to him. By all accounts, he was as lazy as he was stupid, and he died in the process of aiding and abetting an ultimately unsuccessful escape attempt. None of which is particularly unusual around here, except that he went about it with remarkable clumsiness and incompetence.
She gave a slight shrug.
Whatever fate befell him, I'm sure he deserved it. He will not be missed.
Now her smile was different, absolutely confident, even radiant, and Maul realized that his initial assessment of the warden had been wrong. The nervousness he'd perceived had been nothing more than an affectation, meant to throw him off his game. In a strange way, he almost admired it.
What I am extremely interested in, Siddiqui continued, reaching behind her desk and taking out a tablet so that Maul could see it, are these electroencephalograph readings. Perhaps you recognize them?
Maul glanced at the screen, watching the easy waveforms oscillating across it, rhythmic sine waves of deep sedation.
This is a recording of your brain activity from your initial med screen upon arrival at the Hive, the warden said. And here you'll see something very peculiar.
She tapped a switch and the waveform jumped, lurching into an erratic spiking landscape of sharp peaks and dips.
What's happening there?
Maul met her gaze with absolute indifference.
I have no idea.
Really?
Something subtle twitched at the corner of the warden's lips.
See, now that's really interesting, because you've got my medical droid completely stumped. If you look here,
she pointed at the screen,
there are certain very specialized aspects of your cortex activating that the droid has never seen on any level of REM sleep. Apparently this particular waveform is called an Omicron spindle. My droid says it's only seen it in certain very proficient telepaths,
which makes you very special indeed. Maul's face remained cold and expressionless. Siddiqui reached out and touched his face, tracing her fingernails down over the curve of his jaw. Leaning in, she dropped her voice to a whisper.
You've got a secret, friend. And here's the crux of it. I don't think you're in my prison by accident. And I don't think you're here to fight.
Then maybe you should let me go,
Maul said.
Oh, she said with a smile. I could never do that. Not now that you've become such a favorite in the galactic gambling community. You've become quite a star, Jagannath. That is what they're calling you, isn't it?
The Tooth?
Maul stared at her narrowly. At length, his attention was drawn to the desk that occupied the far side of the office. Underneath it, something was glowing very faintly, casting an almost imperceptible green light across the tan carpet. He looked up at Siddiqui, who still held the tablet in her hand.
Let me see that.
This?
She hesitated a moment, then handed it to him.
Suit yourself.
Maul took the tablet and regarded the flat display screen for a moment,
where the waveforms of his brain's electrical activity twitched and spiked. He shook his head.
"This means nothing to me,"
he said, and with a flick of the wrist tossed it across the office so that it hit the floor under the desk. Siddiqui gazed at him serenely. She didn't seem at all bothered by this small outburst. If anything, it seemed to validate her own suspicions about who he was.
"You're quite an exceptional specimen, aren't you? Exquisitely trained, practically custom-built to survive in almost any environment. Fierce, quick, resourceful, and adaptable against any imaginable obstacle or opponent. A precision instrument of savagery."
She paused, her voice softening slightly. "In a way, you really are the perfect inmate for Coghive 7. You are the one we've been waiting for." Maul's eyes darted under the desk where the warden's tablet had landed. The display screen reflected upward to reveal what he'd thought might be there. A tiny streamlined piece of electronics emitting a faint green light from the underside of the desk. He gazed back at Siddiqui.
"Are we finished?"
"Not quite." She gestured at the guards. "Leave us." Smite appeared uncertain.
"Are you sure you..."
"Now!" Siddiqui gestured them out with an impatient jerk of her head, shutting the hatchway behind them and sealing it. When she turned back to face Maul, her expression had changed yet again, becoming focused and intense.
"You weren't supposed to survive your match with the Wampa," she said.
"You've deduced that for yourself, I suppose. In fact, I'd be willing to bet there are a great many things that you know, but that you're not sharing with me. Like why you're searching for Iram Radik." Maul's expression was unchanged.
"Is that a question?"
"You may think that your true purpose here can be kept secret, but rest assured."
Her face twisted, becoming angular and harsh.
"There is nothing that goes on inside these walls that I won't find out about."
"You will inform me what you've already discovered about Radik's whereabouts here, and who sent you here to find him."
She waited.
"Was it the Dasilajic clan? The Huts?"
Maul said nothing.
"Very well."
She smiled, but there was no joy or pleasure in it.
"Have it your way.
And in the meantime..." Siddiqui's lips drew back slightly further, showing just the lower rim of her teeth.
"Rest assured that I'm going to keep matching you. Eventually, I know you'll tell me everything."
Maul didn't move.
"That all depends."
"On what?"
"On who else is listening."
She blinked at him, not comprehending.
"Meaning what?"
Maul nodded back at the desk.
"That device hidden under your desk is a miniature microphone. I'm guessing that you didn't place it there yourself, which means you probably had no idea that it was there."
"What?"
Siddiqui turned away from him and went to the desk, bent down to look underneath it, yanked the device loose, and then stared back at Maul. The expression of shock and dismay in her eyes was profoundly gratifying.
"So," Maul said, "I assume we're done here?"
XXII. Blue Witch.
In his errands for the IBC, handling millions of credits for clients whose financial privacy was vital, Vesto Slifford traveled with the usual arsenal of security and surveillance disruptors. Most were standard electromagnetic emitters, ion pulse shredders, and white noise generators,
Gray market gear designed to foil any unwanted wiretaps or recording devices that might compromise his client's confidentiality. He also traveled with surveillance gear of his own, including the bug that he'd placed under Warden Blur's desk. These days, he scarcely gave any of these instruments a second thought as he installed them around whatever workspace he'd been given. Their deployment was, for him, as unremarkable as unpacking his overnight bag. But this time he'd brought along something special. A gift from the banking clan's lab techs.
"We're still beta testing it,"
the tech on Moonalinst had told Slipher before he departed, handing him a featureless blue tube about the size and width of his index finger.
"We call it the Blue Witch."
"Poetic," the moon said dryly. The tech shrugged.
"It creates a void on the most sophisticated security holocams. Like a lens flare, except transparent. And it follows you around the room. Works on all electronics, audio and video. Completely undetectable. Careful, though."
He'd tapped a button on the bottom and the thing blinked instantly to life.
"She runs hot."
Slipher had inspected the device and shook his head, handing it back.
"I've got my own equipment."
"Uh-uh."
The tech crossed his arms.
"He wants you to take it."
"He does."
"I spoke to him personally. He wants to be assured that you've taken every precaution."
And so Slipher had brought the thing along with him. Now, sitting in his guest quarters off an unfinished upper level of Coghive 7, he switched on the Blue Witch and waited for his holo unit to activate. A high-frequency whine shivered through the air, and within a few seconds, he found himself face-to-face with the moon who had sent him here, arguably the most intimidating presence that he'd ever encountered.
"Magister Damask," Slipher said, bowing slightly.
"Slipher?"
Higo Damask was wearing a long-sleeved robe and a transpirator mask. In the background, the holofeed captured just the faintest hint of whatever world he was currently occupying. An elaborate fortress on a jungle moon of some sort. Slipher thought he could make out the cry of exotic birds in the distance.
"You've taken all the necessary precautions for this transmission."
"Yes, Magister."
"And what have you learned?"
Slipher felt a thin blade of anxiety slide upward from his stomach to press against his chest cavity. Though he'd only spoken twice with Higo Damask before departing for Coghive 7, he'd intuitively grasped that when it came to relaying bad news, it made no sense to waste time.
"Distressingly little, I'm afraid."
"Really?"
Damask's tone was impossible to read.
"That is disappointing. Have you made contact with Maul?"
"Not directly, no. But the device that I planted in her office allowed me to listen in on a conversation between him and the warden. He denies knowing anything about Radik. Denies, in fact, that he's even been dispatched here to find him."
Damask's eyes narrowed.
"So he doesn't know that I sent you?"
"No, Magister. I was under the impression that you wanted your name kept out of it."
Slipher waited, feeling a thin film of perspiration gathering over his skin.
"Was I mistaken?"
For a long time, Damask said nothing.
"Perhaps Maul's true mission here is more secret than I was led to believe."
"If we know who his control was," Slipher began.
"I know who his control is. That is not the issue."
Slipher nodded hesitantly.
"Sir, if I may..."
"What is it?"
Is it possible that Iram Radik isn't on Coghive 7? Or anywhere, for that matter? With no way of knowing how this hypothesis might be perceived, he drew in a breath and pressed on. Surely you've heard the speculation that the man himself doesn't truly exist. That he's, well, a sort of ghost.
A ghost?
A construct, fabricated by a cabal of arms dealers. A false front, created to intimidate the competition. I mean, the fact is that no one has ever actually seen Radik and lived to speak of it. Perhaps Maul is discovering that for himself as well.
Slipher's voice cracked, and he stopped long enough to swallow and steady himself.
Or someone has gotten to him. Again, Damask did not respond right away, choosing to simply gaze back at Slipher over the bridge of his breathing mask. Then he reached out of view of the hollow. For a moment, Slipher feared he was going to cut off the transmission. But instead, a wash of data sprang up, superimposed over the visual transmission. Bright columns of digits and various ports of call rising over Damask's face.
18 standard months ago, Damask said, a Vigo from the Black Sun Syndicate docked an unlicensed shuttle out of Gateway. The destination was Coghive 7. That particular cargo was a load of stolen Taraski explosives that had gone missing from a Blastech heavy ordnance satellite the previous year. 6 months later, the same shuttle docked again. This time it was carrying a load of beryllium.
May I ask where you acquired this in...
It doesn't matter. You could have easily uncovered it yourself if you had lived up to your reputation as an analyst.
Magister, those specific ingredients...
Slipher stared at the hollow, struggling to absorb what was being said along with the columns of data. The conclusion was unavoidable.
You think someone's actually manufacturing thermal detonators here on Coghive 7?
Or worse?
I can't imagine.
Our intelligence indicates the most recent shipment to arrive was less than a month ago. Orbital detection identified the payload as weapons-grade depleted uranium.
For the first time, Vesto Slipher realized that he had nothing to say. Not that it mattered. The mask seemed to have grown tired of listening to him.
Iram Radik is not a ghost, nor is he a construct, a false front, or a figment of Command Galactic imagination. He is real. Given the facts at hand, there can be no doubt that he is alive and well and operating somewhere inside Coghive 7. And depending on whatever high-grade ordnance he may be manufacturing next, I have reason to believe that Maul's mission may represent a greater threat to galactic stability and my own personal safety than even he is aware of.
So you're asking me to...
I'm asking you to stop hiding your inadequacy under the pretense of idiotic speculation. And do your job. Get the information before Maul does. Deliver it to me and me alone.
Yes, Magister.
In the meantime, you may find it helpful to remember that until you have satisfied your assignment, you can consider yourself a permanent resident of the prison. Is that clear?
Absolutely, sir. And may I add, if I have disappointed you in any way, I...
But it was too late. The hollow was cut short, taking Damask's face and the data flow with it. Slipher was talking to dead air.
Factory floor.
Maul sat in his cell, poised on the bench. The hatch stood open in front of him. The rest of Gen Pop was out wandering the gallery, killing time, waiting for the alarms to signal the next fight. But for the moment, he preferred solitude, or what passed for it. His recovery was not complete. He needed time and silence to rebuild his strength. Leaning forward, he placed his right hand between his knees and lifted himself up off the bench with one arm, holding there for a count of 50 before lowering himself and switching to the other arm. He repeated this exercise 10 times for each arm, back and forth. Then, using both arms, he lifted himself straight up into the air, extending his legs, body held erect until every muscle trembled with the strain. There was nothing particularly pleasant about the deep core burn, but it was familiar and provided an outlet for the anger that had continued to grow and fester in him since he'd returned from the warden's office. He lowered himself back to the bench and exhaled, shaking off the sweat from his head. Even with the hatchway open, he felt a faint sense of claustrophobia. The cell felt minutely smaller. Perhaps it was. Retractable walls and ceiling panels would certainly be programmed for such subtle adjustments, and at this point, he'd almost expected Siddiqui to be tampering with his sense of perception in whatever way she could. He'd frustrated her attempts to interrogate him, but that wasn't much comfort. What he'd really longed to do was rip her head off with his bare hands. But that wouldn't solve his problem either. "I'm going to keep matching you." He'd expected nothing less. She would keep fighting him until she killed him or he told her why he was seeking Radik. If the wiretap device hidden beneath her desk was any indication, she wasn't the only one trying to gain that information. His thoughts migrated to Artigan Truax and his son. Both would be under heavy guard because of their escape attempt, rendering them currently inaccessible. But Maul knew that if he bided his time, the opportunity would present itself. He remembered the old man's whispered words.
"Egan knows everything."
Yes. And if he did... Something moved outside the cell. Instantly on his feet, Maul was moving to the open hatchway in less than a second. But what he found waiting for him was not an inmate at all. The clawbird perched across the concourse gazed down at him with black and lightless eyes, the same bird he'd spotted in the tunnels. It had something in its mouth. A scrap of bone.
"What are you doing here?"
Maul asked it. At once, the thing let out a sharp, plaintive caw, then spread its wings and took flight. Without making any conscious decision to do so, Maul went after it. Running down the long corridor, bolting past the occasional inmate loitering outside the cells, he cut through great swaths of open space, never letting the bird out of his sight. The walls blurred by. Leaping a waist-level barrier, vaulting over a pile of debris at the far end of the walkway, he knocked two prisoners aside without slowing down. The clawbird flew faster. It darted upward along the ceiling, cut left, and disappeared through a ventilation shaft. Propelling his body upward, Maul flung himself after it, plummeting down a 10-meter drop, and hit the ground running, his eyes instantly adjusting to the darkness, chasing it through a half-visible maze of utility droids and sub-corridors, branching off in a half-dozen directions. He couldn't see the bird any longer, but he could still hear it clearly up ahead, its wings pounding hard through the gray spaces, betraying its position. Sprinting, jumping across an unfinished platform, he landed on the other side and cut across the catwalk that adjoined it to a web of cables that affixed it to the far wall.
Maw grabbed the cables, pulled himself hand over hand to his destination, and swung himself up and through yet another hatchway into the wide-open space that awaited him there. The bird had landed on an insulated electrical conduit and was staring down at him from a thick warren of debris, wires, threads, bits of circuitry and trash that he realized must be the thing's nest. For a moment it just stared down at him with what might have been begrudging admiration. A small bit of bone was still clasped in its beak. Maul glared back at it.
"What are you doing here, bird?"
He looked around at the space where the chase had led him. A region he'd heard described as the factory floor. According to prison lore, it was another unfinished level somewhere beneath the haunted reaches of the metal shop. And for a moment, he simply peered into the arched ribs of the ceiling support struts, then down onto the abandoned steel prairie of the Durasteel plating. The word factory seemed to have been applied in its loosest imaginable interpretation. Whatever was supposed to have been manufactured here had gotten no further than the machinery that had been installed to build it. Conveyor belts and pallet racks stood empty around him. Up above, smoked glass lenses gleamed down. More surveillance. Omnipresent eyes. Maul moved past all of it with barely a glance. The cold vacuum of space felt very near, pressing against the outer shell of the space station with its own hissing intensity. And he felt artificial gravity intensifying. A byproduct of poorly calibrated field generators that nobody had bothered to install properly in the first place. Like much of Coghive 7, this place had a slapdash inconsistency, as if the whole thing had been put together in the dark. Of all the technology, only the cameras, silent and omnipresent, seemed to function according to spec. Guards were watching. Guards were always watching. He took several more steps and stopped short. The structure in front of him, he supposed you had to call it a sculpture, was built entirely out of bones. It stood as tall as he was. A gangling conflation of ribs, skulls, and phalanges, human and non-human alike, all wired together into some utterly new composition. It wasn't the only one of its kind. Looking around, he saw that this part of the factory floor was a veritable forest of bone sculptures, some suspended from the ceiling, others perched on the walls. As indifferent as he was to aesthetics, Maul found the assemblages themselves strangely compelling. Whatever else was happening in the bowels of Coghive 7, someone or something was down here creating a new race of horrors that the galaxy itself had never dreamed of in its blackest nightmares. It spoke to some part of him that he'd never known to exist. For an instant he thought of the clawbird with the bone in its beak, and he understood now why he'd followed it here. It had led him to the one who'd made all of these things. That was when he heard it. The unmistakable servo whir of mechanized belt treads moving up from behind. He spun around to see a small maintenance droid advancing blithely toward him, carrying more bones with it. When the droid saw Maul, it stopped and squawked at him in some form of machine language.
"What are you doing here?"
Maul asked it. The droid didn't move. Then, with a panicked chirp, it reversed its treads and tried to get away, but Maul lunged for it and hoisted it up, arresting its escape.
"Easy, Jagannath," a voice said. "There's no need to terrorize my droid now, is there?"
Maul set the thing aside and looked around to face the diminutive inmate standing behind him, beaming serenely up at him. It was the Chadra Fan he'd met in the mess hall, the only one who hadn't reacted to the explosion in the kitchen.
Coyle?
Lost your way among the great unwashed, did you, brother?
Brushing the droid off, Coyle patted it on its head and sent the thing on its way.
What are you doing all the way down here, we wonder?
I followed the claw bird,
Maul said.
Bird?
Coyle blinked at him.
Now that's a riddle worth pondering, isn't it? Why did the prisoner chase the bird?
Then, without waiting for Maul's answer, he knelt down and began gathering the bones that the droid had dropped, humming quietly to himself as he did so.
Mind giving me a hand with these, brother? Got a work in progress around here somewhere, doesn't we?
Maul looked at the bone sculptures.
All these are yours.
Hobby of mine, isn't it?
Coyle gave the armload of bones a fretful glance.
These aren't going to be enough. I was supposed to meet a couple of the kings here. They were bringing me another shipment.
He swung one arm, encompassing the sculptures.
I build things, you see. And around a place like this, bones are some of the most common construction materials. Catch my meaning, do you?
He gestured toward the vacant darkness to the other side of the conveyor belt by the opposite wall, and Maul looked up. The Chatterfan's newest sculpture was a towering convocation of femurs, ribs, and vertebrae, with sleek skeletal wings and a face built completely out of skulls. It rose into the uppermost shadows of the factory floor, at least 8 meters high. But there was an aspect of it that Maul hadn't noticed before. Viewed from a certain angle, the bones crisscrossed to form a pattern, like a mathematical equation or some foreign alphabet, a code that defied immediate interpretation. He cocked his head, stepping closer. There was something inside the sculpture, something he couldn't quite see from here.
What does it mean?
Mean?
Coyle chuckled again.
It means you still haven't answered my riddle, brother.
What question?
Why does the prisoner follow the bird?
The Chatterfan peered up at his own sculpture for a moment. Then, without waiting for Maul's answer, tucked a pile of slender bones under one arm and scurried up a ladder to the top of a maintenance gantry alongside the sculpture. Maul glared up at him.
What else do you build down here?
Oh, all sorts of wonderful things.
Weapons?
Oh, that's another riddle, isn't it?
Coyle gazed down at him, and this time his rodent-like face bore no trace of expression.
Anything can be a weapon, he said quietly. Isn't that so?
Then another glint of a smile as he ran his fingers along the underside of the gantry arm and held them up for Maul to see the faint reddish-black residue.
Slimy to touch, greasy to feel, but mix me with blood and I'll eat through steel.
His eyes twinkled.
Do you take my meaning, brother?
Enough riddles.
Maul felt the last of his patience draining away. He grabbed the Chatterfan by the shoulder, drawing him close.
I know that I'm getting closer to Iram Radik. I need to talk to him soon. My employer has business to transact.
Your employer? A cool voice spoke up from behind him. And what employer might that be?
Maul released Coyle and spun around. The Twi'lek was standing less than a meter away, his gaze fixed on Maul's. His approach had been absolutely silent, as if he'd been borne forth on a current of dark smoke.
Zero,
he said. Jagannath. The Twi'lek nodded at him in acknowledgement, then turned his attention to the unfinished bone sculpture next to the maintenance gantry.
Ah.
He touched it with what appeared to be genuine admiration.
This is coming along very well, Coil. You've made great strides.
I thank you, Coil said. I'm still not finished, though. I need more bones.
No shortage of those. What is it that we say?
The Twi'lek considered.
The worm turns.
Coil smiled, finishing the saying.
And there are always more bones.
Worm, Maul asked.
Ah!
Coil said, turning back to Maul.
That's the next question, isn't it?
He smiled, but this time there was very little warmth in it, as he spoke in that same sing-song rhyme.
The nightmare had a nightmare of its own. Deep inside the darkness, fully grown.
Maul turned to Zero for an explanation.
What is he talking about?
My friend here speaks of the Syrox, Zero said.
The wolfworm of Coghive 7.
The one that moves in the ductwork of the prison,
where it lives and grows fat on the blood from the matches. A nightmare within a nightmare, if you like.
You may have already encountered its offspring, Jagannath,
and you no doubt will again. But the thing itself, well...
He stopped and shuddered with revulsion.
At night sometimes, in the lowest maintenance shafts, if you put your ear to the wall...
Horror stories don't interest me,
Maul said.
Being one yourself.
Coil piped up.
I would think they might, wouldn't it?
Ignoring the Chadra fan, Maul kept his attention focused on Zero.
I met the man you told me about,
he said.
The one who came here looking for Iram Radik. The one who saved his life. His name is Artagan Truax.
Truax.
The Twi'lek's expression was impossible to read.
Is that right?
Radik exists,
Maul said.
And I know he's in here somewhere. The gang serve him, or someone who works for him. They smuggle the weapons parts in on the supply shipments. There's a chain of command, and Radik uses it to protect his identity.
He waited for Zero to deny any of this, but the Twi'lek just regarded him thoughtfully. When he spoke again, his voice was low and careful.
Assuming that you are one step closer to finding the truth, Zero murmured, you'll need to look much harder than that.
Who's above the gangs?
Maul asked.
Who's the go-between?
Zero gazed at him.
You know, Coil is right. Coghive 7 is a nightmare. And yet...
The Twi'lek regarded him silently for a moment.
You have already witnessed courage within these walls as well, have you not? And perhaps even selflessness?
Maul felt his forehead growing hot with anger.
I see only weakness. And weakness is its own punishment. Just as strength is its own reward.
Is it so simple, then?
The Twi'lek inquired, but the remark didn't seem to have anything to do with what Maul had said.
And meanwhile, you remain unswerving in your mission.
Yes.
The search for Iram Radik.
Yes.
Maul said again. And in that moment he glimpsed another possibility, one that hadn't consciously occurred to him before now.
What if all of this, even these oblique riddles, this maddening uncertainty, the questions that themselves seemed pointless and incidental, might all be part of some larger test from Sidious? A means of evaluating his capabilities as a Sith Lord before he allowed Maul to participate fully in the grand plan. He narrowed his eyes at the Twi'lek.
I need to know everything.
In that case, Jagannath, I invite you to look upon the answer to your own riddle. Do you remember it? He gestured up at the bone sculptures.
Why does the prisoner chase the bird?
And now Maul saw what was moving inside it, flapping its black wings in the shadows.
I don't.
Because
it's a rook,
Zero said. Maul turned back around to look at him, but the Twi'lek had already turned and started to walk away from Maul, descending into the darkness.
Twenty-four. Wish List.
Wish List.
Boy, wake up.
Maul watched as Eagan opened his eyes and stared directly up at the red tattooed face peering down at him. When Eagan tried to sit up, Maul held his shoulders down, pinning him flat to his bunk, leaning down to speak into his ear.
Where's your father?
He's still in medbay, the boy said. His leg...
Maul shook his head.
I just checked. He's not there. Where was he taken?
Taken?
The bewilderment in Egan's face erupted into panic. His face looked haggard and terrified, his cheek still bruised and swollen from where Voistock's elbow had struck it, and then realization began to seep through his features.
Why would anyone...
Your father knew Radik,
Maul said.
Who?
I am Radik. Your father saved his life and followed him here to Cog-Hive 7. That's why he brought you here. In Medbay, he told me that you have information about where I can find him. He said you know everything that he knows.
That's not...
Egan shook his head.
I don't know anything about that, I swear.
Maul resisted the urge to shake him just to see what might come loose. It had not been a good night. Since leaving the factory floor and his highly unsatisfactory meeting with Zero and Coil, he'd prowled the holding cells restlessly, making his way to Medbay, only to find it deserted. The old man's cell was empty too. Maul had questioned the gang members, but no one knew anything of Artigan Truax's whereabouts. Having spoken Radik's name aloud, the old man seemed to have vanished completely, swallowed whole by the system that imprisoned him.
Look, you have to believe me,
Egan said.
If I knew anything, I'd tell you.
He gaped up at Maul beseechingly.
I've never even heard of this guy Radik.
Maul looked down at him. Maddening as it was, everything the boy said rang true. His ignorance on the topic of Radik and his father's connection to the arms dealer sounded absolutely authentic. There was only one part of the story that didn't make sense.
If you don't have any connection with Radik,
Maul said,
then why are you still alive? Why didn't the guards terminate you and your father after you tried to escape?
To this, the boy had no answer. Maul left him there in his bunk and went back out to the concourse, up the long hallway, to the silence that lay beyond.
Jagannath.
Iz Smash's voice whispered.
It's me.
Maul paused and glanced down to where the other inmate was crouched back against the wall outside the prison laundry facility.
Even here amid the leftover reek of detergent, he'd smelled the Nelvanian before he'd seen him. The dampish, feral odor of the inmate's fur already familiar to his nostrils.
Brought you something?
Iz Smash said, digging into the hip pocket of his uniform and slipping a tightly folded rectangle of flimsy plast into Maul's palm.
Just downloaded it off a utility server. Not the easiest thing to get either on account of...
Is it complete?
Uh-huh.
There was no mistaking the trace of pride in the Nelvanian's voice.
That's everybody, far as I can tell.
Maul scanned the list of inmates. 218 names in all, with numbers, cell assignments, and criminal histories in reverse chronological order, some of them going back several years. His own name was the most recent addition. A single name, Jagannath, and a list of trumped-up mercenary charges and crimes that Sidious had provided for him before he'd dispatched Maul on this mission. Out of the corner of his eye, he was aware of Izmash beginning to edge away into the shadows.
Wait. The Nelvanian stopped. Who's this?
Maul pointed to a name midway down the list, one that had leapt out at him instantly, echoing the last word he'd heard spoken from Zero, down on the factory floor.
Rook?
Izmash looked up at him, eyes widening ever so slightly.
Who is he?
The Nelvanian shook his head.
Don't know. Never heard of him before.
He's here in Cogive 7. What species is he?
No idea.
Izmash shrugged.
Look, there are lots of inmates on this list I've never met, he said.
He was already beginning to back away again, casting longing glances at the hallway.
Now, if there's nothing else you need...
There is.
Maul's hand fell to the other inmate's shoulder, stopping him.
I need you to hack back into the system again. Get into the algorithm itself. Fix the next match, so I'm fighting Rook.
What?
Izmash shot him a look of pure incredulity.
Do you have any idea how difficult that's going to be? Especially after I've hacked it once already?
He shook his head.
After what happened in Medbay, the guards will be looking for anything out of the ordinary.
You've done well,
Maul said, nodding at the list of inmates.
You've already proven yourself more valuable to my cause than the one who was leading you. Strabo will learn his place beneath you,
Maul said.
If he has not already.
I'll need time.
You'll have till the next match. By my count, that gives you 3 hours.
But that is...
I'll create a diversion, Maul said. I suggest you take advantage of it.
How will I know when the time is right?
I'll be in contact with you.
He took the list and walked away.
Skull Game.
There was no meal being served at the moment, but Maul found Coil in the mess hall anyway, on his hands and knees. The Chandrafan was humming to himself jauntily as he burrowed through the refuse bins in the corner, digging for scraps and tossing them onto a spare tray that he'd scavenged from the kitchen. Maul waited until Coil stopped, straightened up, and turned around, his whiskers dripping with something thick and pasty.
Jagannath,
the Chandrafan said, beaming, as convivial as ever.
Ready to fight again, are you?
He rubbed his hands together.
We're all expecting to see you victorious, and very soon.
Maul didn't answer. His response, when it came, was to reach out and dump a small handful of bones onto Coil's tray. The Chandrafan frowned at them, momentarily flummoxed, then looked back up at Maul, blinking quickly.
What are these?
For you, Maul said, to use in your work.
Is that so?
Coyle picked one of the bones up and examined it thoughtfully.
Yes, I might have use for it. Yes, indeed I might. I thank you, Jagannath. You have my gratitude. Yes, you do. Although it makes me wonder.
I've been looking into your background.
Maul said,
why you were sent here to Coghive 7 in the first place.
Coyle's eyebrows twitched.
Oh, yes?
You weren't always a sculptor. Before you came here, you made other things.
He waited.
Counterfeit currency, to be exact. Credits on demand.
The rodent's face became the very picture of serene innocence.
Did I?
If I were to ask you to ply your trade again for me,
Maul said,
I could supply you with any number of bones for your sculptures in exchange.
How much are we talking about exactly?
300,000 credits.
And what would you be wanting it for?
I need to buy something.
Well...
Coyle rubbed his hands together and bobbed his head from side to side thoughtfully.
Well, well, well. I would need materials, of course. A means of fabrication. A craftsman's best friends are his tools. And the end product...
Make a list, Maul said. Give it to Zero. He'll get you what you need.
And for me?
Maul stopped and turned back.
What do you want?
My newest work, Coyle said. I believe you've seen it. It could benefit from a certain type of skull. A larger one. Saurian, perhaps.
His tongue flicked out and moistened his lips.
I hear there's a death spine Viractyl locked up in one of the lower cell blocks.
A Viractyl?
Intriguing creatures. Have you seen them, brother? 15 meters long.
The Chatra fan grinned.
You see, it's a fascinating thing. Oh, the way the sinuses in their armor-plated skulls are designed to funnel and amplify sound to create a certain specific type of noise when the air passes through.
Maul nodded.
It's done.
Old man.
Artigan Truax awoke to the sound of voices in the darkness. Two of them, conferring in hushed tones from a place he couldn't see. At first, he wasn't even sure they were real. The floor beneath him was cold and hard. He didn't know how long he'd been lying here. The pain in his leg, or what remained of it, was playing tricks with time, stretching it out while it sucked him in and out of consciousness. He was shaking and trembling, spasms that only made the agony more intense. His forehead was blazing with fever. Through cracked lips, he forced the words,
"Where am I?"
He wasn't sure if he'd actually spoken aloud, although he must have, because the two inmates stopped their conversation and peered down at him. Neither of them was human, he saw. One was an Aquilish, the other a Twi'lek, the one that the other prisoners called Zero.
"You shouldn't push yourself, Artigan,"
the Aquilish said. Its words came out as a series of barks, but Artigan, who'd spent more than enough time among such species, fighting for credits, mentally translated the words into basic.
"You'll need rest. You're badly hurt, and you really can't afford to make it worse than it already is."
Artigan tried to move and felt the pain explode back through the hastily bandaged stump of his leg. The entire lower half of his body felt like it was on fire.
Water!
He croaked.
Need a drink!
When you are in Medbay,
the Aqualish continued,
you said some things to that Zabrak that you probably shouldn't have.
He paused.
Information about Mr. Radik. Certain details that you really shouldn't have shared. We can agree on that, can't we?
Radik?
Artigan just stared up at him, stranded somewhere between shock and disbelief.
Those guards wanted to kill you and your son on the spot for your escape attempt.
The Aqualish continued and glanced over at Zero.
Now, it's true that Mr. Radik was able to protect you from being terminated.
Artigan said nothing. But his protection won't last forever, the Twi'lek said. We need to know what you told the Zabrak, Artigan. Details. And please be as specific as possible.
I just told him...
Yes? The old man opened his mouth and closed it again.
Where is my son?
The Aqualish and the Twi'lek exchanged a glance.
Yes, your son,
the Aqualish said.
Perhaps he might be able to help us with our questions.
No!
The old man shook his head.
Leave him alone! Leave him out of it!
From somewhere inside the prison, the alarms began to sound.
Veractyl.
Izsmash removed the little panel from the back of the force feedback climate control valve using a slender metal shim and a pair of tweezers.
Lovely,
he muttered.
The wiring's on a trip switch stepped down all the way back to the primary alarms.
Leaning in, he separated the wires.
Hand me the keypad.
Strabo thrust it over in disgruntled silence. Ever since the regrettable incident in the prison laundry, his status within the Gravity Massive had plummeted from leader to toady. Meanwhile, within that same stretch of time, without a word being spoken, Izsmash had somehow risen to the level of de facto captain of the Massives. The reversal was humiliating. Yet there was little to be done. The rest of the crew somehow seemed to sense that Jagannath had appointed Izsmash as their new captain, and that was the end of it. Now he and the Nelvanian were standing on a 2-meter-wide expanse of latticework in one of the countless sublevels of the prison. Steam pipes and 400-degree thermal vents bracketed the concourse on either side like heavy, cylindrical pillars. From the other side of the wall that formed a seemingly abandoned stretch of holding cells, something screamed and thumped, emitting a short, loud hooting call. Whatever was in there, it sounded huge and angry. He shot a glance at Izsmash.
You're sure this is the spot? This is where Jagannath told me to hack in.
The Nelvanian picked at the wiring, threading the keypad into place.
No idea how he's going to keep from tripping the alarms, though. Personally, I think we're all dead.
He glared at Strabo.
Hold that light steady, will you?
Strabo almost shot back a retort, but held his tongue. He was only here because he too had received a message from Jagannath telling him that his presence was necessary for this operation.
apparently his sole reason for existence now, was taking orders from others.
"What if..."
he began. But that was as far as he got before the hatchway to his immediate right exploded off its hinges. Strabo leapt back with a cry of surprise. What he saw defied all expectation. An orange-skinned, death-spined Viractyl, 4 meters high, came bursting forth into the concourse, its tail thrashing and whipping the air. The bird lizard was shrieking and hooting wildly, slamming its body against the far wall, and immediately Strabo understood why. The Zabrak, Jagannath himself, was sitting astride its back, clutching its beaked face with both hands, jerking it right and left.
"Jagannath?"
Strabo's mind whirred.
"How did he get in there in the first place?"
Then he saw it, just a glimpse through the open hatchway. The ceiling of the Viractyl cell, with the open panel that had been dislodged from above. Directly in front of him, the bird lizard bucked and swung itself 180 degrees around, braying all the louder as it tried to throw Jagannath from his perch. Its hind leg came forward, hooking one claw-like foot into the Zabrak's torso and slashing his skin. But the red-skinned inmate hung on with a kind of brute force determination that Strabo had never seen before in any species. He was suddenly grateful that he decided not to defy Jagannath's orders to come here, and glad that he'd never had to face the Zabrak in a bout. By now, the entire prison was responding to the disruption. Guards' boots were pounding way up the hall. From the walls, alarms wailed and keened. Looking off to the right, in the midst of everything, Strabo saw Izmash working furiously over the keypad that he'd patched into the prison surveillance system, swiftly tapping in digits with a focused intensity that was completely at odds with the mayhem around him.
"What's he doing? Why is he..."
A blur of activity snapped Strabo's attention forward again. Jagannath had managed to grip the Viractyl by its crest and wrenched its armor-plated skull hard to the right, slamming it directly into one of the steam pipes along the far wall. The creature shrieked again, a wailing, mournful cry that turned out to be its swan song. The steam pipe burst apart, shooting a thick, scalding blast of focused heat directly into the thing's face, boiling its flesh and scalding its eyeballs in their sockets. The effect was immediate. Strabo's nostrils stung with the stench of burned feathers and flash-fried skin as the Viractyl's flesh peeled back to expose the thickly plated vault of its cranium. Its body collapsed, with the Zabrak still astride it. Voices murmured behind him, and he glanced back over his shoulder. Curious inmates had joined the guards, who were crowding up the hall now, drawn by the noise and activity.
"What happened?"
somebody asked.
"Lizard broke loose,"
Izmash muttered. He'd already finished whatever he'd set out to do with the wiring, yanking the keypad loose and shoving through the open panel, then closing it up just in time.
"Jagannath stopped it."
"Yeah, I guess he did." In front of him, Jagannath had taken hold of the Viractyl's boiled skull. With a final jerk, he snapped it completely free from its neck and yanked it upward. The scorched gray rag of the thing's tongue tumbled free and dangled from its mandible like a limp rag of surrender. Silence fell through the hallway. Dismounting, the Zabrak hoisted its massive skull up over his head. The inmates and even some of the guards taking a step back as he carried the grisly trophy forward down the length of the concourse. At the end, he turned and kept walking.
"Where's he going with that thing?"
one of the guards asked aloud. Strabo heard another guard answer, under his breath.
"You want to ask him?"
beautiful, isn't it?
Coyle peered admiringly at the skull in front of him.
Didn't take you long to procure, did it?
Maul said nothing. He'd carried the bird lizard skull down the factory floor and dropped it unceremoniously at the Chadrafan's feet. And what he felt now, more than anything, was exhausted. Staying on top of the thing long enough to kill it had required more strength than he'd expected. And at some point, during the fray, its powerful claws had dug a deep gash into his right flank. Blood was oozing slowly but steadily from the wound. Yet it would all be worth it if things went as planned.
Are you all right, Jagannath?
I'm fine, Maul said shortly. Just make sure you're ready with your end of the deal.
I've already spoken to Zero about the necessary supplies.
Maul nodded.
I'll be back soon.
You should rest, my friend. You think they'll be matching you again soon?
Very soon, Maul said. If all goes as planned.
Meaning what, exactly?
Maul didn't respond. Just turned to walk away.
Jagannath! Wait!
Maul looked back. Reaching out, Coyle slipped something into his palm. A small sealed packet. Maul glanced down and saw that it was full of finely crushed powder.
What's this?
White Metaxas root,
the Chadrafan said.
It's flavorless and odorless, but a few granules will kill almost anything that ingests it.
Maul tossed it aside.
I don't need this.
Suit yourself. But it might come in handy.
Maul left the packet where it fell. All he needed right now was rest. If he could spend even a few moments recuperating in his cell and fashion some kind of makeshift dressing for the wound, he knew he'd be all right. And if Izmash had been able to take advantage of the distraction he'd created to hack back into the prison's algorithm again... And that was when the second set of alarms, the clarion call that meant the beginning of the next bout, began to shatter the world with sound.
Submerged.
By the time Maul had made his way back from the factory floor to the main gallery, the rest of the prison population was already on their way to lockdown. Alarms howled louder here, the clock ticking down. Holding his side where the Viractyl had slashed him, he shoved his way through the foul-smelling herds of inmates, cutting a path down the corridor that led to his own cell. Stepping aside, he found a guard standing there.
Hey, Tooth, the guard said. Welcome back.
It was Smite, the young CO who had kept jamming the barrel of his blaster against Maul's spine on the way up to the warden's office. But he looked different now. There was something twitchy going on the corners of his mouth. Some twisted species of chemically enhanced depravity that Maul had not seen on the young CO's face before now. His eyes gleamed dully in the recessed lights. Maul wondered if the guard was on something, if he'd speed-jacked some glitter stim before coming here to nerve himself up for whatever his purpose was.
They're matching you again, you know,
Smite was saying, cracking his knuckles as he spoke. He shot a glance at the chrono on his wrist.
In about 2 minutes.
Then you better get out of my cell,
Maul said.
In a rush, huh? That's some place you need to be?
The guard sniggered and cast his eyes at the open wound on Maul's flank.
Maybe you shouldn't have been tussling with that Viractyl, huh? Match hasn't even started and you're already bleeding.
Maul said nothing.
Which reminds me,
Smite added,
Warden sent me up here with something special. Just for you.
Reaching to his belt, he withdrew a pair of zip-tie restraints. Nyla steel, like the ones they'd used on the Wampa.
Take a seat.
Maul sat on the bench, and Smite slapped the zip-ties around his ankles, jerking them tight to the steel post that anchored it to the floor. When he finished, he gave Maul one last wild look.
What's the matter? You got nothing to crack wise about?
You should be more careful what you put in your body, Maul said.
What?
Spice. It will kill you if I don't do it first.
Smite's face seemed to narrow with hostility.
Have a good fight,
he said, and stepped out as the hatch sealed behind him. Maul didn't move. The alarms outside had stopped. There was a long, anticipatory silence, and then a sudden metallic creaking sound that seemed to come from everywhere at once as the prison itself began the process of reconfiguration. Now he would find out if Izmash had been able to accomplish what he'd asked. The zip ties would make it more difficult, but not impossible. There was nothing to do but wait. The cell lurched into motion. It turned and swung around to the right, jerked upward once again, and tumbled head to foot 180 degrees, leaving him dangling upside down by the hand grips and the zip ties on his ankles. Other cells were moving around his. He could hear the noise of their passing. At length, his rotated back down to its original position and stopped. The wall and ceiling panels adjusting themselves, tightening around him. Maul listened for sounds on the other side of the wall. The list of inmates had not told him what type of species Rook was. What would it be this time? A growl? A snarl? A human voice? He heard nothing. He looked at the walls around him. The cell didn't feel any smaller. But something had changed. The entire room tightening around him in some almost imperceptible way. Seconds later, the cell began to fill with water. It came spraying down from a pipe in the ceiling. An ice-cold gush of stinking gray liquid